I'm going to call this meeting of the Little Calumet River Basin Development Commission to order for Wednesday, August 17th, 2022 to order. Please set your phones on stun, please, and let's all stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, with liberty, and justice for all.
Mrs. Lambert, roll call, please.
Thomas
Easy,
absent. Tom Gazzetti.
Here.
Anthony Brodnick.
Present.
Derek Minnitz.
Here.
Dave Castellanos.
Here.
Ron Ware, absent. Robert Oshie, absent. LaVon Whitaker.
Present.
William Baker.
Present. All right, we have a quorum. Next up is approval of minutes from July 20, 2022. Any modifications, changes, motions would say you.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make a motion to approve the minutes from July 20th of 2022.
There's motions, there's a second.
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 Any discussion? Mr. Wicklund, are we still on roll call or can we do voice?
Roll call.
Roll call. Mrs. Lambert.
Tom Bezdecki.
Yes.
Anthony Brodnick.
Yes.
Derek Minnitz.
Yes.
Dave Castellanos.
Yes.
LaVon Whitaker.
Yes.
William Baker.
Yes. Out there for everyone to see at our website, which includes every audio of the meetings that we held here. So in case you have insomnia, by all means, go there and be able to listen to some of this good stuff happening in the region. Next up is the chairman's report. Nice to see some folks here today. Obviously, we're doing well. Making sure that what you see in those yellowing pictures over to my left are the floods from September 2008. That's what happens when you don't do maintenance to a man-made flood control structure. So not only do we not want to see that again, we want to make sure that other communities outside of the riverbanks are protected in such a way that we handle the entire watershed, not just the Little Calumet River. So keep in mind that the Little Calumet River takes all the water from the watershed and those properties and communities that help make sure that something like what we saw in 2008 doesn't happen again. We're far better prepared than what we were prior to that particular event. And this is a true partnership between this body, which is a quasi-state body, and every municipality within the watershed. We have meetings every month as it relates to projects that they want to do. If they have other issues that they have to, they come to those particular meetings and we try to coordinate a way to be able to take care of some of the challenges within the individual communities. A lot of this is decades, I mean decades of negligence to the point that has to be taken care of. And we are responsible for helping to prioritize to make sure a flooding event to which this is the primary focus of this body doesn't occur again like what we saw when the forum was shut down for 4 days. It was a little more challenging than even now, believe it or not. That being said, enough of my diatribe. We'll go through the finance report. We'll need a motion to approve the claims to pay the bills from August of 2022.
Mr. Chairman, I make a motion to approve the claims for August 2022 in the amount of $1,115,585.04.
There's a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Let's have some discussion. Mr. Reap, anything to point out?
We'll go over the some of the larger ones. Christopher Burke Engineering for $56,501 for the Griffith Levee and interior drainage. That's for the Griffith Levee. That's actually, that project is out for bid as we speak. Western Engineering, we heard from them last month for engineering for the Beaver Dam Ditch Watershed Study. They are complete. We are having a discussion meeting on the 24th, I believe, to talk about some of their findings and to see some opportunities that are possibly out there. Wiltshire Excavating for the clearing of parts of the Deep River. That's just part one. There could be more. That's for $29,200. And then two reimbursements, one for $396,863.48. That's for the watershed project, the two-stage hard ditch channel. That's money was also put in by $100,000 for the DNR coastal program, as well as I believe it was $2 million for the hospital and another $1.5 million from the town to complete that project. We may be meeting in Dyer next month, not sure, to tour that project when it's complete, which it should be by that time. And if it is, we plan on going out there. And then $500,000 for the city of Hammond for the Cadman Avenue pedestrian bridge. And that would complete both of our payments. So the town of Dyer, that's our final payment to them on our commitment. And this would be our final commitment to the city of Hammond. Beyond that, I'm looking for anything. Town of Sherrville, they participated in the tree program for $10,276. And then our USGS gauge quarterly O&M for the stream gauges that we participate in, that's $24,910. So if there's any other questions on certain ones.
Any questions for Mr. Repay about what's going on? He's paying the bills. On the Zoom, gentlemen, be there none. You have a motion and a second. Mrs. Lambert.
Tom Duffy.
Yes.
Anthony Barnes.
Yes.
Derek Nimitz.
Yes.
Dave Castellanos.
Yes.
LaVon Whitaker.
Yes.
William Baker.
Yes. Moving right along, what's happening out in the field, Mr. Repay?
Yeah, really quickly, we are still going through the Calhoun Seepage Monitoring Project. That's going through DLZ. That's the project. Making sure that there are no issues between Calhoun and Colfax with the seepage. They put some monitoring wells there. They put some dye packs closer to the levee to make sure that if there's a high rain event, we could sort of see where the water's coming from. Unfortunately or fortunately, it's been a pretty dry summer. We're going to keep on extending it until we can get some better data. And so that's where it stands. It's not complete. We've notified the concerned residents over there to let them know that this will be extended. North Cap Bridge closure, we finished. We've signed everything. Gareth is ready to go. That, I hope, will start right after Labor Day and last about 5 weeks. We've asked them to expedite it as fast as possible because it is a secondary road for many folks traveling in that area and to work. We have received no word from the Army Corps of Engineers on a real estate update. We received one last month. I don't know where everyone is. They haven't responded to our inquiries on whether anything else has been approved. I know myself and Dave continue to acquire the four remaining parcels that are outstanding, and the court is waiting hopefully to approve those acquisitions. Both the Griffith Levy project that is being designed by Burke is out for bid currently. So if you have someone that's interested, they can go to our website. We'll send it to them directly. Those bids are due in October of this year. For the Katie Marsh Trash Rack is a project that was a federal project, but it wasn't our federal project. We partnered with the town of Griffith to fix the trash rack that had never worked since it was installed back, I believe, in 2014. So for the last 7 years or 8 years at this point, it hasn't worked. So this will hopefully solve that problem so that we don't have people out there with large rakes in the middle of lightning storms trying to pull up garbage off the trash rack. As mentioned during the claims, the Cadman Avenue pedestrian bridge is moving along. It is really going full steam at this point, and they still are looking for completion later this fall. And I've spoken about the two-stage ditch there in Dyer. They are ready to go and complete. And like I said, we are hoping to take the tour. They have a place for us out there that we can have our meeting that has the technology. And then before the meeting, possibly we could take a tour with even residents to see and to show what we've done. Sarum Woods was approved by the city of Crown Point for $2.4 million. They broke it into two segments. I sent you a letter from the mayor describing why they separated it into two. Hopefully you feel confident and comfortable enough that they're going to complete the second phase of it. The first phase is strictly flood control, and on that project, we've committed $2.6 million. And then we're looking to buy a sandbag storage container. The place that we were storing for free is, I guess, kicking us out. And so we need a place to store our 220,000 sandbags. So we're looking to buy two large travel containers for the amount of $12,240. But That is the extent of it. If you have any questions on any other projects.
All right, bring it back to the board. Any questions for Mr. Repe? I have one. How many sandbags are we storing?
We have roughly 220,000
sandbags. 220,000. I thought we couldn't store those for an extended period of time because I learned at some point during my tenure is that they rot or something happens.
Correct. If you fill them, they have a set useful life. So we have certain amounts that are filled with sand ready to go immediately. But the ones that we're talking about are all in crates. They're in crates of 10,000. So we just put them in crates. And so long as they're not filled, the useful life continues on and we rotate them in and out. So
it's a bag without sand.
Correct.
Is there any other locations that we have as opposed to a container? And where would that container go?
The container would go to the Public Works Garage on Fishers in Munster.
Is it better to have them all in one spot or have them strategically placed with other municipalities along the river?
Each municipality has some. That's our largest share. Now, just to give you an idea, we have an overabundance of sandbags. We're sort of hoarding them.
Which is a good call.
We only need roughly 30,000 at this point, according to the specifications by the Corps.
By who?
By the Corps.
Oh, okay.
So
they the same people that did the rack.
Correct.
Okay.
But that means we have seven times the amount that we really need. And what we generally have been used for is the clearinghouse in case, for instance, Sumatra Resorts has an issue. We ship them down there and then we get replenished by the district office in Chicago. Now, we've already sent, I want to say, 40,000 sandbags down to the Lake County Highway garage on 41 in Cedar Lake already. So we were trying to reduce our footprint, so we sent 40,000 down there already so that when they do have an event, they don't need to come to us immediately. They'll have 40,000 already ready to go. So we used to have over 250,000. We sort of reduced it a little bit. But yes, we are hoarding sandbags.
Anybody else?
I have a question, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Broadnax.
Thank you. And thanks for asking. That was my first question. I was going to ask two, but you answered the same one I was going to ask about the sandbag. Second one is, Dan, just can you bring some pictures of the Calumet Avenue Bridge next time?
Yeah.
If possible. Thank you.
I mean, you want the current status? Oh, that's right. You're not. Never mind.
Exactly.
Sorry.
Maybe it's just for me. Yeah.
I'll get you some.
You can send them offline.
That's okay. I'll send them to everybody just in case you haven't driven by.
I don't have anything else, Mr. Chair.
Guys, thank you.
Is Burke finished with the Griffey Levy design and build?
Yeah, it's all been designed at this point. I don't know if we got the final build, but it's all been designed. It's out there. And we actually are sending them to the Army Corps because it requires them to look at it because we are altering an existing levy or federal project, so it's a 408. But we already spoke with them and they don't see a problem. Seeing that number one, we're fixing one of their problems, and another one we're extending the protection on it. Now, who pays for the Griffin levy is a decision that you guys will have to make in the future, but we wanted to get it out there on the street so that people have plenty of time to look at it and get some good numbers together for next year.
I'm sorry, I do have another one. Corps of Engineers? Yeah, you say Corps. Crediting? I know they didn't come to the meeting, but what's our update on credits?
Nothing has changed since the last meeting. They approved, I believe it was 12 or 14 parcels last. They were looking, and Jody will correct me, they were looking at some tax sale properties that we already had done new title work on. So, they should be approving those. There are a couple community owned project or properties that we submitted for, namely the city of Gary for the redevelopment and their parks and recreation that we're assuming we are going to get credit for. And specifically, I will give you an example for the Griffith Golf Center. They, since we have an agreement with the town of Griffith to say, in exchange for the flowage easement, we will design the levee. We now need to get a letter, now that it's complete, from the town of Griffith stating that we did, in fact, design the levee. Paperwork is great. In fact, in accordance with the interlocal agreement that we signed with them. Once that happens, $100,000, or at least that's what we've been told, we will get $100,000 worth of credit for that flow adjustment.
So no update just means no new, nothing more has been credited. They're making progress, they're moving, but just no status change yet. Nothing new has been credited.
Not since July.
Thank you.
So just for some of the new folks that are listening and here at the meeting, after the flood of 2008, after the board got reconfigured, it was told to us, and as the board, we are the local sponsor, that the local sponsor owed the federal government $17 million. So not only did we go through the flood of 2008 and all of that hullabaloo, but we also found out that there was a bill outstanding for $17 million. When you hear about crediting, that's what that's about. Any other questions for Mr. Repay about the field? Which went on the field. I'll add one thing just to clarify. I know some folks are here with regards to Maya. Did we get a payment from Maya?
No.
So it's my understanding, correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Wicklin, that per the contract, that they have 90 days after notification that they're in arrears to be able to clear that debt. Is that true?
That's correct.
So that's a legally binding contract from the original deal that was put together with Maya as far as payment of their annual, is it rent? What do you call it?
Fees.
So, okay, that said, is there anything else for Mr. Repay as it pertains?
Yes, sir.
Yes.
No invoice from Gary of Construction. Does that mean they're not working on our little project down there, or does it mean they just forgot to submit their bill?
They started work on it. And
what project is this?
It's a natural spring. So I went out there today, and there was two pieces of equipment out there, but there hasn't been much movement. And so I emailed them today and asking them. But to answer your question, we have not received a bill. That's the point. I haven't seen a bill.
Are they progressing with the work?
Slowly. They still contend that they will be done October 1st, which I think is per the agreement. So I don't know if their intention is just the
Hit it hard
in September, but this has been some nice weather right now.
Anything else for Mr. Repay? Mr. Whitaker? No? No? All right, moving right along. Next up, it appears there's a presentation. Mr. Repay, could you introduce that, please?
About a year ago, the commission entered into an agreement, and we're calling it the Lake County Parks Conservation Collaborative, between Audubon Wetland Initiative, Lake County Parks, and I hope I didn't miss anyone else. And if I did, they'll tell me about it, about upgrading some areas, some wetland areas, some mitigation areas, improving them, and then also doing some planning for some possible future projects. And at the time, this commission voted to give them half of the dollars that they requested, and then in a year's time, which is now or about now, they would come and show their progress, and then you would see whether it's successful or not. And then if you do, then maybe the next meeting we issue the next dollar. So this is their part of that agreement, whether it was a verbal agreement to say I'm going to give you a presentation on what we've been doing out in the field for the past year. Best I could do, Harry and Daniel. I don't know.
And who's making that presentation, sir?
I think you've got Harry and Daniel, right?
Gentlemen, go speak. Please come up to the microphone, state your name and address for the record. And if there's tech, Mr. Repay is outstanding in that role.
I'm thankful that Jody's still here. I have to take her kids to school.
Hello, my name is Harry Kuttner, and I am the Calumet Coordinator with the Wetlands Initiative. And give me just a moment, and I will share my screen on this Zoom meeting. Yes.
Make a note, please, that Commissioner Wyszlinski has arrived.
Sorry for my tardiness.
real jobs.
Okay, thank you. Thank you all for having us tonight. So as I said, I'm with the Wetlands Initiative. We are one of the partners on the Little Calumet River Conservation Collaborative. It also consists of Audubon Great Lakes. We have Daniel Suarez here from Audubon Great Lakes, Lake County Parks, City of Gary, the Nature Conservancy. Those are our core partners, but we've also been working with NIPSCO and obviously very closely with the commission. I'm here, Daniel and I are here to provide a year-end report of how things are going so far. So let's get started. Okay, so I'm going to sort of go over sort of the nuts and bolts of what's been happening on the ground, and then Daniel provide a little bit more context for what that means overall. The Wetlands Initiative has been managing the contractor work this year. So we started off the year with having last season's treated Phragmites mowed at Highland Rookery and Chase Street Wetland. Now, ideally, that Phragmites would have been burned in a prescribed burn, but that was not an option this year. At the Gary, Indiana properties, the city of Gary has a moratorium on prescribed burning in 2022 for air quality reasons. And then at Highland Rookery, the Nature Conservancy decided that it wasn't a great idea to burn due to some community concerns. It's right in the neighborhood, so we need to spend more time building relationships with the local neighborhood on that property. So here up on the screen is Chase Street Wetland, in between Chase and Grant Street. So this spring we mowed 27 acres last season's frag. So that image down at the bottom, it's a pretty good panoramic view of what that looked like in July. September this year we have Phragmites retreatment planned using a Marshmaster with contractors. This retreatment is about half as expensive as initial treatments that have happened in the past years, mostly because in these next images, you can see that Phragmites has really thinned out. So that first image on the left is taken a few weeks after mowing occurred before the growing season. And then that image on the right.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but Phragmites are invasive species. Yes. Why are we spending so much time? People keep asking me why I spend time on this. Why do I spend time on this?
Yeah, so Phragmites common reed is honestly the nastiest invasive plant species that we have in the region. It's also all across North America. But it chokes out native vegetation, which ultimately leads to decrease in wildlife habitat. Honestly, it's an eyesore also for the public. When a site is overrun with Phragmites, folks can't even take a walk in a preserve. So trying to get rid of that Phragmites, make room for native vegetation, and restore some of these wetland systems.
Thank you.
Really quickly. So that image on the right, that's just a month ago. And as you can see, there's not a whole lot of Phragmites regrowth, which is exactly what we're looking for, which is why retreatment cost is a lot less. Looking over at Highland Rookery in Highland, Indiana, we had planned to mow.
This is at Clyde in the boardroom, folks, just so you know.
Thank you. So this is, we had planned to mow that area, the entire site, but due to a lot of rain this spring when we were trying to mow, and then also some nesting marsh bird concerns, which Commissioner Nimitz brought to our attention, we ultimately decided to cut that mowing short, mostly to preserve those nesting bird species, because Highland Rookery does get a lot of bird use and it's a big asset to that neighborhood. So we mowed 26 acres. That photograph that I have up is just showing again in July, that seemed to be a really effective treatment. So a couple years of herbicide work and then mowing really seemed to knock that back. Coming up in September, we also have retreatment planned across the site. But again, just like Chase Street, that Phragmites is looking a lot thinner. So that image on the left is summer 2020. in that background that's full of Phragmites as well as some cattails. But that same area, slightly different view, but the same area, just a couple weeks ago, actually this was last week, I was out there with Mr. Zanstra. There's very little regrowth. It looks like hell, unfortunately, because of all that dead standing Phragmites. And that's why we want to either burn it or mow it this coming winter. But good sign, there's very little regrowth in there.
When you mow them down, will they deteriorate, break down?
Yeah, so that's over time, they will biodegrade. It'll take a couple of years, which is why burning, that's one of the big benefits of burning. You get rid of it right away. It lets light and heat from the sun penetrate the ground and allows native species to germinate, things like that. So it's not ideal to mow, but mowing seems to be effective, and it'll just take a little bit longer for that to break down.
Is there a way when you mow, you could actually harvest it, so to speak, and dispose of it, burn it, bundles?
Yeah, it's not a very common service, and it's not very cost effective, but there are some local universities that have, you know, been researching that, and it's something that in the field is developing, but right now it's not cost effective, and there's not really many businesses that even provide that service, unfortunately. And then looking at MLK, Martin Luther King South Wetland, which is in City of Gary, it's in between Georgia Street and Martin Luther King Drive. This site is developing really well. This has been the main focus of the Lake County Parks Restoration Crew, which you all generously fund. So these are two different photos. On the left, up in the top, we have a view from the outlet channel at the northwest corner. You see there's not a lot of vegetation. We're mostly seeing Phragmites on the left there. But this year, we did planting about a year ago, and you can see that same area, it's full of cattails, which is great habitat for nesting birds and muskrats. And we're seeing native vegetation develop. That photo down at the bottom is an image of pickerel weed, which is a great native species. So essentially, as we remove these invasive species, we're seeing some of those early successional natives popping up in the seed bank. So we did plug planting in there, but we're also seeing at this site a lot of things that have just historically been in the soil that are starting to germinate, which is exactly what we want to see.
Is this south of the expressway?
Yes, it's just south of I-80. This is another view of the northeast corner. So back in 2020, again, we've got Phragmites, not a whole lot growing in there. And then just a month ago, that same area is full of cattails, full of early successional native species. I included that photo of duck potato, which is some people call it arrowroot also, but it's a really showy, beautiful white flower. It's exactly what we want to see. So that area has been opened up. The Lake County Parks Crew has been hitting invasives in there. They removed a whole bunch of woody species like buckthorn and honeysuckle. And we've got our very first volunteer plug planting scheduled about a month from now with one of our other partners at IU Northwest. Professor Spencer Courtright has been one of our partners along the way. So his restoration ecology class is gonna come out. So we're planting about 2000 plugs in that area, which is a little less than an acre, as well as the southeast corner of the property, which is sort of a remnant sedge meadow that has historically been in the site. So that photo on the bottom right, on the right, is that area has been pretty much cleared out of invasives by Lake County Parks Crew. That's been a huge area of focus for them this year. And then that image on the left is we're working with the City of Gary to get permitting for aerial herbicide application at that site. MLK South has a lot of downed logs. It's really hard to get in there with work crews. So using a helicopter is the most cost effective and work effective option. Just a couple updates on the crew. I know Mr. Zamstra might have some more to add, and he comes in every month, but the Lake County Parks crew has been really crucial and key in this work. We're still in a phase the front end phase of these projects where obviously you all are pouring in a lot of dollars to contractor work. We're also, you know, matching a lot of those funds through National Fish and Wildlife Foundation grant. But the Lake County Parks crew is filling in all those other spaces. They're there year round, 40 hours a week out there. So we really appreciate that work. Our partnership has been keeping up monthly field visits with the crew leader, Emily. And that's been really key as, you know, just giving her advice on what she should be focusing on. And she's our eyes on the ground. So she points out when there's, you know, problem invasive species cropping up in certain areas. Excuse me. Another exciting thing is we secured a $5,000 NIPSCO Environmental Action Grant, basically to buy chainsaws, brush cutters, backpack sprayers, and some safety equipment for that crew. And then also some of that funding is going towards some field training for the crew, basically professional development so they can do their job better and more effectively. And then lastly, the next phase of this work, which is what I presented on 6 months ago, is the installation of two water control structures, one at Martin Luther King South and one at Highland Rookery. We are still in the permitting phase of that project. That process has honestly taken a lot longer than we expected. Probably not a surprise to you, yeah. Good news though, we did receive our IDEM 401 permit for Martin Luther King South. Highland Rookery is still under review. And then a couple of weeks from now, Dr. Gary Sullivan and I are meeting with the Army Corps at both sites to look at the properties, and all indications from our meetings with them up until now is that they will approve both of those structures. So that's where things are at now. TWI has been developing an RFP for both projects. We've gotten list of contractors from Mr. Zanstra, and we'll put out a public call for proposals once that gets approved. Fingers crossed we can still get these in later this year. But that's where things are at on that, basically.
Are the permits that you require just from the Corps, or are there also state and local permits?
Yeah, so 404 and a 408 from the Army Corps, and then individual 401 from Indiana Department of Environmental Management. Those are the three permits for each project.
Thank you.
That's what I've got for today. Daniel will come up and give us a little more context at where
we're at. One second. For what was just presented, any questions or comments for this young man?
Appreciate the update. I thought it was outstanding.
Yeah. Help me, Mrs. Lambert, with regards to Zoom land. Any of those gentlemen have any questions? Our commissioners I'm speaking with specifically. They could also say no, because I don't see your faces. No? Okay. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
All right. Hello, everyone. I'm Daniel Suarez, conservation manager for Audubon Great Lakes, here to provide a little bit more context. I'm just going to start about the monitoring work, because the monitoring work of the secretive marsh birds has been the basis of all of this work. We've been using the secretive marsh birds as the indicator for overall marsh bird health. So simply the presence or absence of certain focal species can indicate to us whether we're on the right track or whether we need to adjust our approach. So just in 2022, we haven't crunched all of the numbers yet. That'll come likely 6 months from now or the next time that we're here. But I just wanted to give kind of an overview of what we've been doing. We have three volunteers that are covering all of our monitoring points across MLK South, Grant Street, Chase Street Wetlands, and Highland Heron Rookery. The surveys require three visits to monitor birds starting in the beginning of May. There's a period the first half of May where you make one visit, the second half of May you make a second visit, and the first half of June you make a third visit. And then there's an additional vegetation monitoring component so that we know if a particular spot is really good for birds. We can look at the vegetation data and say, what's going on here? How can we replicate this in other places? Each site has a different number of survey points depending on how large it is, but those 27 survey points represent over 150 hours of volunteer volunteer contributions to this effort. So without the volunteers, we just wouldn't know how things are progressing. Just to kind of reiterate some of the things that Harry said, I wanted to compare 2021 and 2022, what we've seen so far. So this is a view similar to the one you saw from Harry at MLK South. This is the northwest corner looking east. And 2021 was really marked by low water levels. We had low water levels across the board, which is really, really important in terms of germination and revegetation, like Harry was showing. When we draw those water levels down, all of those seeds that have been waiting in the soil, as much as a century of research shows, you create the right conditions, those seeds can germinate and come back. And so we see a lot of bare ground over here, but that bare ground is opportunity for native species to colonize and flourish. And so last year, like Harry was saying, this is the area where we did some plug planting. Across all of the monitoring sites, across all three visits, we had 361 focal bird species detection. So if we heard the bird or saw the bird of the 11 focal species, there were 361 instances. In 2022, we had 558 focal species detection. So that's almost a 200 more detections than 2021. And this year, we've seen higher water levels than we did last year, but still below average. So we know that a lot of the increase in detections came from Sora and Virginia rail. Those are really good species to have increases in. And it's really encouraging for the trajectory of this work. The majority of the detections that we saw were in that first monitoring period from the first half of May, which indicates to us that a lot of those birds might not necessarily be nesting in these sites, but they're migratory species. So some of them might be going as far north as the Arctic Circle, but 200 more detections over last year shows that even if it's for migrants, we're creating habitat that birds are actively using. We would have seen similar numbers last year if the conditions were right, but the combination of lower water levels and the germination of native species has given the birds a lot more habitat and food sources and places to rest on their migration journeys. Just can't emphasize this enough, the progress that we're seeing in areas where Phragmites has been treated. So on the left, this is another photo of an area where previously had been dominated by Phragmites. Now we're seeing native species like rice cutgrass, duck potato, like Harry was saying, water parsnip, things that are really, really encouraging, and things that at some sites, you simply don't have those species in the seed bank and you need to either buy seeds or you need to plant plugs of them. So we're starting from a really good place here and we're seeing a lot of good results. On the right photo, you can actually see that's a ton of water parsnips coming up in an area with a lot of those dead stems behind being dead Phragmites. So this doesn't mean that we've won yet, that there isn't any threat, but the trajectory on between contractors, the eyes on the ground of our partnership, the Lake County Parks crew, we've got the system in place to keep these places continuing to improve. Six months ago when I was here, we were talking about just starting to embark on the development of management plans for all three sites. So we're starting with MLK South, Highland Heron Rookery, and Chase Street Wetlands. We are nearing the end of that process. We've almost got drafts of all three management plans put together. We have a core team that has been working on those. So that's Audubon, Lake County Parks, the Nature Conservancy, and the Wetlands Initiative. Once we get those management plans in a good place, we'll send those over to Mr. Repay to distribute to all of you to give us feedback. We see these documents as serving multiple purposes. One, to help the Lake County Parks crew when they're out in the field just understand what they should be looking for, what the annual sequence of events can be. Very important training tool for any new staff members that are brought on board to kind of orient them. But also, these documents are likely going to be important for you all. As you look over these documents, you'll get a better understanding of the trajectory that these sites are on, some of the decision-making points that exist there, but also just a summary of the resources as they currently exist and a trajectory of about 10 years from now into the future. So these will be really important, not just for folks that are doing it on the ground, but the planners, the fundraisers, and everyone in between. This work, within the Little Cal Basin, also dovetails with some work that we've been doing at Hatcher Park. So Hatcher Park sits, I'm going to have a slide in a little bit that shows the extent of the area we're calling Marshalltown Marsh, which has joint ownership. Different parcels are owned by the Lake County, or the Little Cal Commission. Others are owned by City of Gary. So we've been doing a lot of community outreach in the Gary area, connecting folks with Hatcher Park and by proxy in the future to Marshalltown Marsh. We want to make sure that we're including community in decision-making and future visioning, because if we're successful in fundraising and doing work in Marshalltown Marsh, Hatcher Park is likely going to be the main gateway for folks to access that area. So we're currently in the process of firming up our memorandum of understanding with City of Gary so that we can hire contractors and get them out there this fall, starting invasive species work. And we're also planning a lot of community-focused events through our Wild Indigo program, which is working to co-develop programs, environmental education, and stewardship at Hatcher Park. And Harry has been helping lead up an effort, collaboration with the U.S. Forest Service and the Student Conservation Association. So two partners that haven't traditionally been involved in our Little Cal work, but are interested and already active in the area. And so just east of Hatcher Park is the Bethune Early Childhood Development Center. The U.S. Forest Service and Student Conservation Association have a program called Communitree, which prioritizes working with communities and increasing tree canopy, not just for beautification efforts, but to reduce urban heat islands, to make our communities more resilient in the face of climate change. And on September 30th, we've got a tree planting event focused at Bethune, and the habitat between Hatcher Park, Bethune, and Marshalltown Marsh, we can consider that a contiguous block of habitat. So by Bethune electing to plant some trees on the school property, we're just creating more habitat and a bigger buffer around Hatcher Park.
Mr. Suarez, I'm sure Mr. Repay told you that we have a tree program as well, so keep that in mind as you go through those types of initiatives.
Absolutely. We're hoping that this event in September will give us a good gauge as to how much community interest there is in tree planting, so we'll definitely keep that in mind and reach out. In the past, we've also brought up a proposal that we were going to be putting into the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, NOAA, and the Great Lakes Commission, for a feasibility study of Marshalltown Marsh. So this was going to, this funding opportunity provides funds for feasibility study, construction, and design of projects. And we put in the proposal at the request of NOAA officials. Audubon has an existing relationship with NOAA. We've had previous projects, not only in the Illinois-Indiana region, but across the Great Lakes states. Unfortunately, we were not successful in getting the funding this year, although we're very optimistic about the future prospects. All of the proposals that were funded in 2022 went to areas of concern across the Great Lakes states, of which Marshalltown Marsh is not one of them. So when we asked for comments from NOAA, suggestions for how to improve our proposal, they told us, apply next year, it's likely that your proposal will score higher just because there likely won't be another emphasis on funding areas of concern. They also told us that there is another grant that we should really strongly consider applying for called the Coastal Habitat Restoration and Resilience Grants for Underserved Communities. This grant, which we'll be applying for, that'll go in October, will give us funds to start a process for engaging the community residents in Marshalltown and across Greater Gary and helping us get feedback on what residents would like to see. So obviously we'll have the opportunity to talk about our vision for creating more habitat, possible re-meandering of the Little Calumet River, at least figuring out what costs might be associated with that, but also would give us funds to ask Gary residents what kinds of recreation, what kinds of access things should we be considering. And so NOAA has told us that if we get that funding, that'll get our proposal in a much better place for 2023. So hopefully by next June, I can report to you all that we've gotten that funding and that'll start us on this process of not necessarily touching or doing anything on the ground, but just understanding what possible future scenarios there might be. And that's my last slide for you.
Outstanding. Any questions or comments for Mr. Suarez? And Mrs. Lambert, help me with the gentleman on the Zoom, please.
I've got a question.
Yes, sir. Mr. Nimitz.
Daniel, it's nice to see you again. I appreciate your presentation as well as yours, Harry. You talked about, I see a trajectory of improvement. You said 2021 numbers of secretive marsh bird observations have increased in this year. Now you're doing this within the Little Kevin River land. So in the city of Gary and the city of Highland, but you're also monitoring through volunteer efforts in the Calumet region as a whole, both Illinois and Indiana. Can you just, the rough numbers, can you see a difference in our investment locally in the locale compared to maybe marsh birds in Illinois or maybe marsh birds in the Dunan Swale, for example?
Yes, I would say that the combination of efforts in along the Little Cal in Indiana are much more than some of the other sites we see. Some of the sites we monitor, we're simply monitoring. We're not doing anything on the ground. We're not reducing invasive species. We're not putting in water control structures. The work that you've all funded is kind of an all hands on deck approach. We're hitting it not only from the invasive species side, but we're putting in the systems in place so that we don't have to wait for the water levels to drop naturally. We can artificially do that. So if we know Phragmites has snuck back in, it's gotten a foothold, we can close the water control structure, raise water levels, and effectively suffocate or drown out the Phragmites. So we're seeing, I would say, without having the raw numbers in front of me, I would say the site that probably performs the highest among the three is Chase Street. How that compares to other sites, maybe in Illinois, I don't have that information, but I can definitely bring that for you next time we're here. But the combination of invasive species management, a dedicated crew, contractors, and putting in the water control structure, I think we'll continue seeing that trajectory kind of rise at a faster pace than we will at those other sites where there might be minimal work happening that we're not that involved with or where simply it's just monitoring.
Thank you.
Here. You got experience in vegetation removal and all that stuff.
Yes, sir.
Have you ever seen like a raking project where you go behind a tall rake?
Like a combine or something.
Yeah, I mean, something where you can. Obviously, I'm just a basic guy and I rake my lawn and depatch it so it grows back greener and more.
So there is an attachment that so Daniel or Harry both mentioned a machine called the Marshmaster. So for those that aren't aware, it is an amphibious vehicle that on tracks that you can drive out into wetlands and occasion open water. There's an attachment that they attach to the back that will grind the root system as well as the above standing dead Phragmites. However, it still takes a long time to break down those stems naturally.
Mm-hmm.
And the removal cost would be extraordinary.
Right.
So they do have an attachment, but I think it's more specific to selective areas that are the best producing of their goals.
Yes.
Does that, would you agree with that?
Yes.
Would it be like out of bounds saying it's almost like harvesting bamboo?
Yeah, I mean, there's research ongoing right now about turning Phragmites into biofuels, and that's a whole slippery slope where you end up getting people who are trying to plant Phragmites to grow biofuels. So the technology is honestly it's always improving and evolving. In a couple of years, there'll be more cost-effective ways to do the harvesting. We've already spoken to some contractors around the issue of aerial helicopter spraying. A lot of contractors are starting to work with drones, which get you much closer to sensitive areas and tree lines. Right now, those costs are really high, about double what it would cost to get a helicopter out there, believe it or not. But every year, we should see those costs start lowering as it becomes more second nature for these contractors to have a staff member that's a drone operator. So the technology is evolving as we're doing the work, and we're always looking for the cheapest way to do it so we can hit as many acres.
Economical.
I will say, if I may, so I have seen the areas that you have worked. You mentioned the Highland Rookery, you've mentioned MLK Wetlands and Chase Creek Wetlands. I have seen them every year for the last 5-10 years. And I will say that I am impressed with the control of invasive Phragmites that you all as a collaborative have achieved over these last few years. So kudos to you all.
Thank you very much.
I drive past it. Go ahead, Mr. Castellanos.
First of all, I want to compliment you on the report. It's excellent. And I have just two basic questions. One, in your program, do you reach out to any of the schools as far as to encourage the youth to get involved in environmental development for our area? And also, I'd like to know, has the Eagles in that particular watershed program, is the family of Eagles, have they expanded? What do you know more about that?
So with your first question, with the schools,
right.
We do reach out to schools. We're starting right now with mostly community groups, and then Bethune Elementary is one example of a school that we've started making good relationships with. As we develop programs, as we're starting on this process with City of Gary at Hatcher Park, we're gonna have more regular opportunities for students to get involved. So we've, just in the last couple of weeks, we posted a native plant giveaway in the City of Gary with Gary residents. There was a huge demand for more, so we're gonna do another one in the fall. And at those events, you get the grandparents, all the way down to the grandkids there. So we're starting to engage them. They're starting to be more familiar with the work that we're doing. And as we start at Hatcher Park, there's gonna be regular opportunities. It's a little tricky with sites like MLK or Highland Care Nursery just because of how wet and difficult to navigate those sites are. But certainly from a recreation perspective, we're hoping that in the future, we can bring people out on the water, on the Little Calumet River and do things like that, start the education process from a young age, but also work with parents and grandparents, because we know that if we can put the hooks in the kids, they're more likely to get the parents and the grandparents to participate. And then with regards to the Eagles, I'm not sure which Eagles you're referencing at one of the particular sites.
Right, there's a family of Eagles, I think, just in Griffin, between Griffin and the
West of Chase Street.
You told me that at the groundbreaking.
Right. I wanted to know that, have you been, because I know about Audubon's involvement, the species of birds, and I do know that we have a family of eagles, and I think we stopped a couple of guys coming over there with arrows, but evidently I just wanted to know that where did the Audubon Society stand over there?
I haven't seen the eagles this year. Sure. The eagles can be, they can be there 1 year and gone the next, especially once you get young that are starting to raise, they will, before they're sexually mature, they'll start endeavoring to create nests and start making attempts at nest building. So sometimes you think there's going to be an eagle nester that year, then you go back and nothing ever happens. So unfortunately, I don't know for sure what's happening with those, but there's plenty of habitat along the Little Cal form.
Thank you.
Mr. Wyszlinski. I just want to reiterate what you said there. I've drive past the Highland Rookery on a daily basis, and the change is completely 100% different than it was 3 years ago.
Yeah, but now we just have to sustain that work and make sure we don't backslide. So got to stay proactive.
Mr. Gostecki.
When you talk about plugs, what are you plugging, and how many, like when you guys go out and do a major effort, how many are you planting?
So a plug is just like a plant that's already started growing. It's in a little cell, probably about 6 to 8 inches of soil. And what we do is we go out there, and the wetter it is in September, we're going to be working in a pretty muggy area. So it's pretty easy. You just get a spade or a little metal bar, create a little opening, you pop the plant in, you can pack the soil, and it's wet almost all year. So last year we planted in August, which is, we were wondering if that was a little bit too late. And those plants have, I would say, over 95% survival of those plugs. As we get better at planting these, we've participated in efforts in other places where you get 40 well-trained volunteers, you can plant 20,000 plugs in a couple hours. So we're just starting our process right now. We're starting slow. Harry said we got about 1,500, 2,000 plugs. We're gonna make pretty short work of that. But that's kind of like a good indication that we're not necessarily fully in the next phase of work, but we're starting to get from the stage of purely invasive species control, and we're starting to get towards enhancement. So it's a good step to be in it.
And then I have another question. So we fought the war and we've won some ground back. How long do you need to monitor, and then what steps are necessary to monitor as we move 5 years down the road?
I hesitate to give you this answer, but it's forever. It's forever, but as the effort increases, you're paying people less to go out there and actually kill the invasive species, and you're hiring people to just go and monitor and identify when there's a new crop that's popping up. But we've been working a lot kind of in the interior and the cores of these habitats. And another kind of in the next phase of work, we might consider trying to prioritize working along the buffers in areas where Phragmites might be able to recolonize it.
Thank you. So the goal, just to add to that, is to do similar to what we've been doing here within the watershed, is to partner with some other entities, specifically to stay with NDOT and those that, you know, are right next to it. Because personally, we spent all this time and effort trying to fix a couple of these areas, and all surrounding it is all Phragmites growing. So it has to be something that continues to be incorporated to all the projects that we do. And as long as we can have folks like you that are going to be committed to the project for a significant number of years, it helps to have the same boots on the ground, to use one of the past 15 kernels that we've been through, right, Dan? Six. So that would be important. And as you guys go through those particular things, if you see areas that are close by to some of where we're currently working, there's going to be that next phase or that next stage. That would be helpful as well to be able to continue to do that, including Lake County Parks and the initiative that they have to do, because we would hate to see some of the other local partners growing this stuff while we're trying to knock it out. Thank you. Mr. Braun next, Mr. Whitaker. All good.
Mr. Chair, I have one
Mr. Whitaker.
Maybe a question, I suppose, but it was a great presentation, by the way. When you guys gave the number of increase, I think it was 221 or 226. Is there a forecast that, based on that particular geographic location where the species count increase, that you would expect for it to be over a given period of time? Commissioner Kosnick, you said, you know, 5 years from now, when you mentioned 5 years from now, what would you expect to see? And my second question is there anything related to the weight or the amount of omissions that are being prevented as a result of this, and species, invasive species being removed and native species being placed back in the area? Is there any type of a number associated with improper gases being prevented or removed?
So for your first question, in terms of like being able to predict how many detections or how many species we should see, that's really hard to tell, just because what we do to take care of the birds while they're in Northwest Indiana, we can't guarantee that they'll be well taken care of everywhere else along their journey. So some species that we treasure as rare birds might be seen as agricultural pests when they go down to Central or South America, where they spend their winters. So it's too hard to tell. That being said, we do have data. We have an online hub of our data, the Marsh Bird Monitoring Hub. And part of that is basically we have a score for what we would anticipate for the percentage chance that one of our 11 focal species would be nesting at one of the sites. So in other words, looking at where birds have nested in the past, looking at data from across the birds' species range on where they're nesting, we can kind of make an educated guess for the likelihood that with all of the invasive species work we've done, with the percentage of open water versus upland habitat, it's very technical, but we can estimate a particular species presence, whether that's year to year. It's not like we can guess that in 2027 we'll get a very rare bird to show up, but we know that average across years that there will be a percent chance that those species will be there. It might not end up that way, but it's the best that we have right now with the data. As we collect more data, as we add more and more years, that data will get refined and we'll be able to make more educated guesses. With regard to the second question, so if I understood correctly, you're talking about as invasive species are removed and native species are replacing them, what types of, or were you talking about like ecosystem services, and were you talking about like emissions, like how that's for climate change considerations, or did I misunderstand what you were asking?
Climate change, gas emissions,
Yes. Yeah. So the native species, so much research shows this, that native species have way more what we call ecosystem services. So basically things that they provide that humans value. So that could be water retention, water purification, carbon storage, and all of the wetlands that we're working on provide those valuable services. The Great Lakes coastal wetlands, of which the Little Cal is part of, are some of the most important habitats that we have in terms of carbon sequestration. Most people tend to think of woods as being the only things that lock in trees, but the carbon that is stored in our wetlands stays underground, whether the plants die, as opposed to a tree, they store their carbon in the tree itself. So if that tree dies, that carbon dioxide is released into the atmosphere. So yes, across all measures, the ecosystem services that healthy habitats provide is leaps and bounds above what a field of phragmites would.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Anything else? Mr. Santor, are you good?
Oh, yeah.
You sure you don't want to talk to us again?
Yeah, I'll do that. Let me.
now that I bring it up,
no,
right now. Wait, I do have some notes.
All right, Craig Zancher, Lake County Parks. So just do a quick update from the crew from the last month. Our crew actually was hosted by the Wetlands Initiative down at the Dixon Wildlife Refuge in Illinois. Back in July. So our crew got to visit the wildlife refuge and meet with the Wetlands Initiative staff and see how they do their work in the wetlands. And it was very beneficial for our staff to get out there and see how they work. They stayed overnight and worked with them the whole next day. So they're seeing how others are doing work in wetlands, similar to what we do, but also techniques that will be beneficial for us. Also in the last month, we had a change. We hired a new employee he's actually the son of our park manager at Three Rivers County Park in Lake Etta. And so we have him in the crew now. He's been doing a great job with us. Also, our Emily, our crew chief, she has been gone the last 2 weeks. She's in grad school, so she's in the process of collecting data and doing work for grad school. So we're happy with that as well. She'll be back next week, ready to go. The crew has been in the last month treating a lot of Canadian thistle and then also purple loosestrife. So that's been the two main areas of focus. And that when she gets back, they'll be starting to hit the phragmites a lot harder. So we're very thankful there and continuing with our meetings and updates, like they mentioned, with our management plans and other items. And then also we're working on doing some connective planning between Three Rivers County Park and the Little Kennemet River Trail. So right now, you know, the trail ends at MLK South. We hope to eventually connect that trail, working with Mitch Marloga from NRPC as well, to make that connection in Three Rivers, which eventually will connect by the bridge over Deep River and the Lake Station. So that, and along with some of the public access we're working on, I think will really benefit this project in the future to connect Gary with Munster and allow for a lot more recreation along this whole area. So we're moving along. Yep.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Zanthra? Either not, thank you, sir.
Welcome.
All right, moving right along. Next up, other issues, new business.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir.
I'd like to make a motion to approve an addendum to an interlocal agreement with Lake County Drainage Board for the Hart Ditch Bank Stabilization Project. The addendum will extend the project area by approximately 1,000 feet to the north and include an additional $1 million in funding, subject to final draft of the addendum and approval by attorney, executive director, and chairman.
There's a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Mr. Repay.
We've already approved one segment of this. It's a continuation of something that we've done 2 years ago. And this, I think, during our discussion during work study, it's the best way to describe it is we increased the scope of this project to increase it by 1,000 feet. And it will connect to hopefully the bridge that Lake County plans on constructing next year.
And just a little background, there's two primary feeders in the Little Cal, Hart Ditch on the west side of the county and Deep River on the east side of the county. Hart Ditch has the majority of houses on it, and they're all about ready to fall in the ditch. So we're starting the process of taking care of those decades of neglect. So there's a motion and second. Any comments or questions with regards to this? And I'm like, either or not, Mrs. Lamb, we have a motion and a second.
Tom Kosicki.
Yes.
Tom Gassetti.
Yes.
Anthony Broadnick. Yes. Derek Nimitz.
Yes.
Dave Castellanos.
Yes.
LaVon Whitaker.
Yes.
William Baker.
Yes.
All right, I don't know if you heard me, but that was a yes for me.
Thank you.
Thanks.
All right. Any other new business, other issues? If not, my favorite part of the meeting, statements to the board from the floor. If you'd like to help us make sure things like September 2008 don't happen again, please come up there to the microphone, state your name and address for the record.
Good evening, members of the commission. My name is Doreen Carey. I live at 7304 Indian Boundary in Gary, Indiana. And I'm here tonight in reference to a letter that was written to the commissioners from Gary Advocates for Responsible Development. And we're here tonight to talk to you about the fact that we understand that your lease license with Maya Energy maybe is in arrear for the fee that they are contracted to pay you. They have 90 days from the date that you notify them, which I understand happened in June, to make that payment. And we're asking you that at the end of that 90 days, if you will take advantage of the opportunity to revoke that contract, which is so unpopular with the residents and the administration of Gary. So that is my first comment. And I know there's other people here tonight who would like to speak, so I'm not gonna take a lot of time. Number two, we ask that you do not approve the transfer of the Maya Energy LLC license to the firm of Calabria that was here, I think on July 7th, to make a presentation, because that would certainly put us in a position of not being able to further oppose the construction of the garbage facility that Maya proposes to build at that property that you are the owners of. We want no more garbage in Gary. And it certainly doesn't match up with the wonderful presentation that you just had to protect nature and the environment and provide recreation and opportunities for the residents of Gary and everybody who lives and breathes in the Calumet, Little Calumet Basin. The third thing is that we ask you to take into consideration the environmental justice issues that impact Gary when making your development decisions. We further request that you take this opportunity to make a special invitation to Gary residents and elected officials to participate in a public input session to be held in the city of Gary on the future uses of your properties located in the city. So that's, I'm going to start it off with that, and thank you very much.
Thank you, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
Jennifer Rutterham, a resident of Gary. And expanding on the point of community input in decisions about properties, there's a tool that the EPA has developed potentially since the decision was made for the original lease with Maya called an EJ screen. And what it basically does is it allows you to input the area of development that you're considering and screen for environmental justice concerns. And we had asked when Maya's permit renewal came up, we had reached out to the EPA and they did conduct this EJ screen on the property in question. And I want to cite just a little bit of language that Mr. John Mooney, Director of Air and Radiation Division, Region 5 of the EPA, put in a letter to Ms. Acker in IDEM. He said, EPA has determined that the proposed location of the facility raises potential environmental justice concerns. Data from the EPA's environmental justice screening tool, EJ Screen, illustrate the severity of pollution and health impacts facing the community living in proximity to the Meyer Energy LLC. The neighborhoods around the proposed facility have some of the highest levels in the state for many environmental justice indexes reported by EJ Screen. He continued, because of the environmental conditions already facing this community and the potential for additional disproportionate and adverse impacts based on race, national origin, or other protected class, the setting this facility may raise civil rights concerns. And I just want to speak to you as a group that I understand there's a process you have to follow right now because you have an existing contract, but I highly encourage any future decisions that are made concerning any of your properties that you consider using the EJ screen tool that the EPA has developed and identifying any possible concerns with proposed development that you're considering. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
Hi. I'm on the television a little here. My name is Reagan Hatcher, State Representative District 3, and avid supporter of Hatcher Park and the support that this board gives to Hatcher Park, along with the wonderful presentation that was just presented a bit ago. I am representing Gary, Lake Station, Hobart, and New Chicago as their state representative. Our state senator, Senator Eddie Melton, who is out of town, I'm also here on his behalf to ask that the contract with My Energy not be renewed, so they are not allowed to transfer that over to another company to do the same thing. Our position at this point is in Gary, is that Gary should not have any other industrial pollution, any type in the city. And we have been working really hard to make sure Fulcrum, we've been working with the Indiana EPA to kind of stop that process as well. These projects in our city continue to hurt the health and the well-being of the people of Gary. So we just ask that you do not support their petition. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Anyone else?
You're getting up.
You're getting up. I see. Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. My name is Lynn Katz Cherry, and I live in Gary, Indiana. I'm a longtime resident of Gary, Indiana. And I want to thank you for the opportunity to address you this evening at your meeting. Like all of the previous speakers tonight, I'm here to urge you to reconsider the continuing approval of the Maya contract now that you have an opportunity to reconsider that contract. But I want to continue Doreen's earlier comments in a particular area, which is that as a resident of Gary, I would specifically like to urge you to come to Gary and have some meetings in Gary. As a resident of that city, you make a lot of decisions which specifically affect our environment and our community and our life in the city. You spend a lot of money that includes money that we pay in taxes. And to use a term that I'm not in love with, but for lack of a better term, if you look at the optics of the situation and at this commission, it doesn't exactly represent the people of Gary, and it's held here in Munster, which is not always accessible to the people of Gary. And it would be really great if you could, on a regular basis, not every meeting, but on a regular basis, come to Gary and have your discussions in Gary, so that especially when you're talking about projects like Maya and other projects which affect things that are going on Chase Street and other areas right smack in the middle of Gary, where people could come and listen and have an opportunity. So we invite you to come to Gary to familiarize yourself with the EPA EJ data that has a lot of relevance to almost all the projects that you deal with, and to facilitate and to look at the, and to oversee, you know, and to affect the projects, as I just said, I think I've lost my place here. So I think I've made my point that you can't change the composition of the commission, because that's not up to you. But you can, you do have it in your power to decide where to meet and to decide how much participation you can facilitate from the people of the areas. And it's not just Gary, it's Hammond, it's all of the places in Lake County that are all forced to come here to Munster, which is not that close to some of the other cities. So I urge you to take into consideration the issue of public participation and the interests of the other people whom you represent, and become more of a traveling show and less of a sedentary show. And come to Gary. We want you to be there. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Yes, sir.
Good evening. My name is Charlie Brown. Currently the county councilman from the city of Gary. Before being a county councilman, I spent 36 years in the Indiana General Assembly. All of those years were spent on the health committee, either as the chair or the ranking minority member of the health committee, dealing with subject matters like you all are dealing with today. This lady, young lady, stole some of my thunder in talking about why the meeting isn't in Gary, where the major interest is, and the permit has been issued to, so that you can see firsthand and hear firsthand the citizens of, more citizens of Gary indicate that they are opposed to this project. I thought the project was dead, and I lost track of it because of that. When the school kids were out demonstrating against it, and many citizens in Gary were demonstrating against this project, because it's almost like many business persons have considered Gary a dumping ground. Yes, obviously they have made some commitments that is basically a recycling project, but now it seems to be changing some, and it's going to be more than recycling. And it is unfair to me and my constituents in Gary, Indiana, to reconsider this project, as opposed to, I don't know if you've heard from anyone other than the business persons involved, but have you heard from a citizen in Gary that is supporting this project? And those are the major points that should be in your consideration. Where do the people of Gary, the people that will be most affected, and most of it negatively, where do they stand on issuing the permit again for this company? I wish I could ask some questions. I'm usually in that position that I could ask some questions as to where you all stand on that. Are you seriously thinking about issuing or allowing this project to move forward, even though you have heard from the children of Gary and the citizens of Gary saying no? Have you heard from a single citizen of Gary, a taxpayer, that is saying, I think this would be a good idea?
I'll engage you, Councilman. The aspect, as you know far better than I, usually folks that support things don't show up. So who comes to the meetings are folks that are a little challenged with the situation. But where we stand on my, which wasn't on the agenda today, was to the point where it's a contractual issue. So this thing went through this board in 17, I think it was, or 18. And it has a lot of specifications that have to meet state, federal, and local responsibilities outside of our purview. We just had the land, and we did that ground license based upon the premise that they met all of those particular criteria. And that's right now what we're sitting on is a contractual issue to make sure that we don't put any legal challenges on ourselves. Because as you know, lawyers are a lot of fun to hang out with.
Yes, they are. But the fact still remains, have they met all of the requirements of getting the permit?
That's not ours.
But you have to issue, you have to issue the land or allow them
to. All right, they have to meet all of that criteria for that transfer to happen.
Well, as you
and all, it's not a debate, sir. It's just that's kind of the background of where we are.
I understand. But you have to also understand and appreciate that there's a group of ladies and gentlemen that come to Indianapolis. They're called lobbyists, and they take us to dinner and may leave some of the facts out of, well, here's why I want you to support this. But you've heard from one state representative here, at least, is there some consideration given to asking all of the state officials that represent Gary to let me hear from you? I don't know why they are not here other than Representative Hatcher, who took my place in the Indiana General Assembly. And she has indicated that Senator Melton, who also represents the city of Gary, I know for a fact one of my best friends, Representative Vernon Smith, is not in favor of this project. So you have kind of a running program here where elect those people that represent the city of Gary are opposed to this. I think I read in the paper where the mayor is also opposed to this.
It'd be nice, and as you know, and having done this a lot longer again than I, that if you have those types of letters, which I'm sure y'all have written before, that have their positions laid out, it helps as we go through months and months of processes with lots of other issues and a lot of other projects that are going through this particular commission to make sure they're addressed and taken into consideration.
Okay. So you're saying that there would be some possibility of persuading you or getting you to understand and appreciate the posture of the many citizens that have already made your point.
We understand. We're very familiar with that area and what's been going on. We're also very familiar that the gun range is right there, too. So, I mean, there's a lot of different and unique situations with particular to this site that brought a lot of folks out. Less concerned about making sure that what you see behind you on that board doesn't happen, and more about this development site. This isn't a development thing. This is a flood control project. As you know, you were in the state assembly when we were going down there trying to get the funding for this kind of stuff and make sure that the whole project in and of itself gets certified to take all of these property owners out of mandatory flood insurance, which puts $4 billion every year back into our community by removing that federal requirement.
I want us to get sidetracked by talking about something other than this project. I'd be happy to sit down with you and talk about how the General Assembly functions and who they favor in situations like this.
We brought the money back, that's for sure.
Of course. And the issue now remains, should this project be seriously considered by you and whoever, whatever, IDEM and anybody else, when A, it appears as though they haven't kept their commitment thus far, B, there are a lot of citizens that are speaking out against this project, and it's not wanted nor needed in Gary, Indiana. I appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you, sir. Yes, ma'am.
Hi, my name is Brenda Scott Henry. I am the Director of Environmental Affairs and the Office of Sustainability for the City of Gary. And I have to say that Mayor Prince has openly opposed Maya Energy coming into the City of Gary to process municipal waste. And there are some, and we also stand here with citizens who have great concern about bringing another waste facility into the city. Maya Energy has not kept its side of its word in terms of what they would do at that site. I was surprised to learn that an entity who we pay our, I know I do, I stay in that Calumet River, Little Calumet River Basin area, and I pay my fee for projects to help reduce flooding, not the development of a facility that I do not approve in my community, but that's an area where I live as well. So that's what I wanted to say at the last meeting that you had, but there was no public special meeting that you had, but there were no public comments. Mayor Prince sent me out to be at that meeting, but I definitely want to voice that the city of Gary is opposed to Maya Energy operating in the city.
Thank you, ma'am. Yes, sir.
Hi, I'm Reverend John Jackson. I pastor the Trinity United Church of Christ in Gary, Indiana, and I am standing here to support the Gary Advocates for Responsible Development and against the Maya Corporation. I was fascinated to hear about Phragmites and how they are an invasive species that causes the native plant life to die. And so I just want to say that Maya, in this case, is Phragmites. And the native species, the people of Gary, Indiana, want to live. And they are in arrears, Maya, their payments. And so at the end of 90 days, we're asking that you will revoke that, just like we are trying to mitigate against Phragmites from destroying the native species. Please let us get rid of this Phragmites that the native species of human that lives in Gary can live. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
My name is Alice Bush, and I'm a resident of Gary, 1106 North Shelby, and I'm retired finally after a lot of years. But I spent my whole adult life in Gary, and I fought very hard along with all the citizens who really care about making our community what it should be, and that is free from garbage. We've had all kinds of projects cleaning up garbage in our city. It seems like there's a lot of people from out of town want to come in and they say, oh, it's just Gary, it's a poor community, dumps their garbage. I lived on a street in my next to a vacant lot, and forever I was cleaning up garbage from construction and all kinds of people coming from out of town dumping garbage. And there was years ago a big fight in Gary about bringing garbage in from out of town, and there's some contract and they said, oh, they swore, you know, they're going to take care of it. We still got landfills with New Jersey garbage in Gary. We really don't need it. We know that you have a lot of weight when you speak to my these people that are pushing it. We know that you out of all the people, who do we go to help us push them out of the city, because we really don't need it. All right, we suffer from, I'm a nurse, started out as a nurse, organized healthcare workers for 40 years. No asthma, you know, emphysema. We've been breathing mill dirt. We've been fighting, dumping waste into the lake, as you know, cleaning up the rivers. You've helped with all that, you know, let's hear us, because, hey, put it on our back. Just tell these people, look, before we do anything, you need to hear from the people of the city of Gary. Go there, and they'll tell them.
Thank you, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
Hello. Becky Hanscom, also from Gary, and I really like the idea that's been brought up of holding these meetings sometimes in Gary. Because 94 is a frightening experience.
Yes, it is.
Secondly, I feel like Maya have not kept their promises. They've not been responsible partners, and they owe the commission money. I don't know. I understand about the legal liabilities, but I don't even know why this would be considered to renew any kind of a relationship with them. And finally, I just want to say I'm standing here as a citizen of the area and also one of the hundreds, if not thousands, of people in Gary in the region that have cancer. this is not just a legal liability issue. This has real consequences for people. And do you know what I see when I go to get my infusions? I see my neighbors. I see my neighbors that I had no idea were ill until I don't see them anymore. So please give our health some consideration. I know that you do, or you wouldn't be doing everything that we saw earlier in the meeting. So I thank you for that. And I hope you will give consideration to everyone that's spoken.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
Father Don Razzulli, citizen of Gary. Just recall, I think you said 2017 when Maya was trying to get the permit. And I was at a city council meeting when the students from Still City Academy, which is the school right across the street, the charter school, and it wasn't held in the city, in City Hall, it was held in the Genesis Center in one of the ballrooms. And the children just had the whole city, the whole ballroom encircled. And they were really against this even back then. And just think about the children. And also, again, like the lady who just finished, you know, the health consequences of what we're dealing with. And this is just piling on. We really don't want this. We don't need this. A lot has been said already. But I know Mr. Brown asked the question too, but do you have the authority after a few more days if they have not lived up to this contract to terminate it, to get rid of them? Do you all have that authority? That's my question.
The only authority that I think we have, and Mr. Wicklin, our attorney, could correct me if I'm wrong, is if they go into default and or if they do sell. And right now, Maya is looking to sell its assets to another third party, which is like any other business transaction. They would buy a company and buy the assets and liabilities of that company. And we could have some say in that.
Okay.
Thank you. Anybody else?
There's a couple on Zoom. Mr. Christopher Harris, go ahead.
Sure. Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, awesome. So thank you for the opportunity to speak. My name is Christopher Harris. I'm a former resident of Gary, current resident of Hammond, but I actually am a former resident of 1832 Central Drive, which is in the Marshalltown neighborhood, which was previously discussed. Although I'm very grateful to hear the positive things that are in the pipeline for that neighborhood, I'm concerned that all of this would be for naught, allowing Maya Energy to operate in the city. I'll tell you a story. When I was a child living in Marshalltown, the very community that was discussed here, there was this cloud, this emissions that were released. And my friends and I, we were playing on the block, and our mothers advised us to go back home, stay indoors while the cloud overtook the community. This is a real experience of people living in Gary having to deal with pollution and dealing with the negative outcomes that are associated with developments such as Maya Energy. The people of Gary do not want this. You mentioned that, you know, why isn't the room filled with people from Gary opposing this, that there are people that could be in support of it? Like, I mean, look at our leaders. Our leaders are here to represent the people. You have Representative Hatcher. You have our Councilman Brown here to represent the people. We have city officials here to represent the people to show that we do not want this in our community. We're already polluted. We have reports from ProPublica. We have tools from the EPA to show that we're an environmental justice community where we have so many developments that risk the health of its residents. We don't need this. You have the opportunity as this organization, as this governmental body, to make a difference and not allow Maya Energy to operate within the city. So I really hope that you really consider this. This is someone that grew up in Marshalltown, that grew up in Gary, that cares about the city. And there are many other people that are opposed to it, but this meeting is being held in Munster. How can people of Gary be able to speak, you know, and it's not even accessible in their own community? You have the dominion to have this and have this say over our community. And the people of the community can't even speak because it's not in their community. You know, it doesn't make sense to me. The board here doesn't reflect the community. I saw only one person that looked like me, and I see no females at all on this board. And you're going to make a decision to that negatively affects the community. And I really hope that you really take heart and can reconsider your decision. Thank you.
All right. Anyone else on Zoom who would like to speak?
let me know.
Turn once, turn twice, three times. All right. Anybody else in here? No? Moving right along. All right, some statements from the commissioners. Mr. Wyszynski.
I just want to thank everyone for coming out tonight, and I do want to thank the Audubon Society and Craig Lake County Parks and our other partners for coming and doing a great presentation. Very informative, and I think we're moving in the right direction with that Herculean task, and hopefully we can make it even better going forward and figure other things out. So, thank you.
Mr. Gazdecki.
I echo Commissioner Wyszynski's statements. Thank you, everyone, for attending.
Mr. Nimitz.
Thank you, everybody, for attending. I appreciated the presentation. So all the efforts done, for even those that aren't here in the room today, but out there with backpack sprayers on doing the work. I also want to thank everybody that had public comments. Thank you for attending today. That's all I have.
Mr. Broadnax.
Yeah, thanks for the public's participation. Really appreciate it. I just also want to just echo, not really echo, but just make a comment myself, specifically to the folks who made public comments and say that there are, I believe our commission is relatively diverse for what it is. There are three natives and or Gary residents on the commission. And we manage this entire thing as a system. So Gary has not been anywhere close to neglected. I understand that this is a very sensitive issue. We are aware of it. But we do have contractual limitations, although we also have influence. I'd also like to say that we have actually had meetings in Gary in the past. We have talked about doing a roadshow, but we've been doing this a really, really long time. And as is, you know, par for the course, people come out when they have a particular issue that they're interested in. But there are also people who come out and who have been coming out for 10, 15, 20 years, every meeting, meeting after meeting. And most of those people are in this community, in this area, which is also part of the reason that we have the meetings here most frequently, just to say that. Nothing else to add.
Thank you. Mr. Whitaker.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I certainly want to echo the words that everyone else has said in terms of seeing everyone express what your concerns are, whether they are related to the watershed management, the environmental aspects of a healthy environment, some more detailed particular things as it relates to my energy. Every partnership, every negotiation is not always a good partnership or a good negotiation. Just like all money is not good money. So it's not much different in there. We currently are in what we're in terms of whatever contractual arrangement that we're in with money and energy. It doesn't mean that we can enter into another option. I'm sorry. It doesn't mean that we cannot enter into another option. And that is to you know, see how we can negotiate removing ourselves from the contract with Mining Energy. It's not necessarily something that we would prefer to do, being that we have an agreement, but it is something with the sentiment of the community that has expressed where they stand with it, that should be something that can be entertained, something that we may want to entertain. And let those things play out the way that they play out. Last but not least, certainly want to thank the presenters that came out tonight, the Audubon Society, as well as the other people from Lake County. Very good presentations. Look forward to working with you guys and taking a show on the road. We have been out and about. Unfortunately, it sounds like some of you have not seen us when we were out and about, but I hope that we are able to get out in the communities again a couple of times, maybe for the remainder of the year, and so that you guys can sort of feel the presence of what Little Cal actually does do and how it has benefited the watershed throughout the entire Lake County. All right, and that's all I have to say. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Castellanos.
Yes, thank you. First of all, I'm going to say that it's an honor to have our representatives here, Representative Charlie Brown and Representative Ms. Raven Hatcher, as well as to thank Ms. Scott Henry from the City of Gary. Thank you for being here. And may also mention Ms. Rochelle Caesar, who yes. is the Constituent Services from Gary. So we also want to thank you for also being here and also for the guard group from Miller. Thank you. But I just want to let you say that I'm with you 100%. I don't want to see my put one stick of nail or piece of wood anywhere near on that property. I think it would be a detriment to us as a people, not only as people who are African-Americans, Latinos, and whites, but as all of North Indiana will be affected by that. And especially now, since what we're doing over there, I mean, we're right now improving that area. We're putting in an artesian well over there that people are coming from all over to come there to get their water. And at the last radio show that we had, they didn't even tell you that we had people from Crown Point and Maryville calling in on what we were doing for that particular project. And they also called in about the Maya project that they didn't particularly like it. But I'll let you know though, the problem that we have here right now and is that we some kind of way we got legally bound here. And I'm looking and hoping and praying that we can find some kind of legal loophole to get out of it. And that comes up to our illustrious attorney that's in his seat right there. He's got a lot on his shoulder. And I'm praying that he can find a way to make this happen. But I want to thank each one of you for coming out and looking forward to working with you. And also, I don't want to forget, leave off the table here, the presentation made by Audubon and the Lake County Parks. They're doing a great job. Looking forward to working with you also, because the work that you're doing is going to enhance the work that we're doing over here in the watershed. So more power to you. Looking forward to working with you. And God bless you. Thank you.
Okay. Next thing is meeting for September. We're always on the third Wednesday of the month. Check the website as far as whether or not the thing goes on the road or not. And I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Motion and a second.
Second.
The illustrious attorney makes me do everything by roll call now. This is Lambert.
Tom Kennedy.
Yes.
Anthony
Brodman. Yes.
Anthony Brodman.
Yes.
Dave Castellanos.
Yes.
LeVon Whitaker.
He says
no.
Yes. Yes.
He can't leave.
Yes. Thank you, everybody, for coming out. We really appreciate it. Respect that. Be safe going home. Stay out for Borman.